Welcome to the Cinepunks Podcast Collective.
Two people, one movie, so many opinions. Welcome to the Mandate.
All right, it's John Wren here with the third episode of the Mandate. I'm here with singer of Iron Price and Dead and Buried and Delaware's Biggest Idiot, Dennis McGonigal. Dennis, what the hell are we seeing today?
Today we are seeing The Void.
And what do you know about this flick?
Absolutely jack shit.
All right. Well, what I know is that it seems to be some, like, hybrid between The Thing and, like, at least, like, it looks like the KKK hangs out. So I'm going to assume it's, like, some cult thing.
Yeah, it looks very John Carpenter-esque.
All right, well, do you have any expectations for this flick?
I have zero expectations for this flick.
All right, well, I read that Synapse hated it, which means I'll probably like it because I don't like when, or I like when art dorks, like, rip things apart because it's normally means I'll enjoy it. So we'll find out in a few minutes, and we'll get back to you when this is over.
Toodles.
All right, so we just got out watching The Void, and I think there's a lot to digest. I'm not sure what we really just watched. Dennis, what are your feelings on the movie?
I watched it. I was entertained the entire time. I didn't get bored from start to finish. But if you were to ask me 10 minutes from now what the hell it was about, I could not tell you.
I liken it to, and we were having conversations with friends when we left, but I liken it to Prince of Darkness. Meets a little bit of, like, Hellraiser.
Yeah, it definitely had some Clive Barker elements to it.
And clearly they have a lot of, like a Lovecraft worship in there, like, with the way the monsters look like. And it was definitely the thought of it being, like, The Thing was pretty spot on because some of the creatures were clearly inspired by Carpenter's remake of The Thing.
Face tendrils, shit like that, yeah.
And then we can spoil shit, so it doesn't matter. But the doctor at the end was clearly very reminiscent of Hellraiser 2, the doctor in Hellraiser 2.
Oh, yeah.
One of the things that I had trouble with the movie was it's clearly done by new people. This isn't a big production, like Hollywood production. And some of the acting in the first, like, 20, 30 minutes of the movie is kind of painful to get through. But once business picks up, it becomes, like, a really, really solid horror movie.
I didn't really have a problem with the acting. I had a problem with the fact that there wasn't very many likable characters. Like, every horror movie you see, there's at least one character you're like, oh, this guy's kind of funny. I hope he makes it through. No.
Yeah, I can agree to that. And one of the things we were talking when we were walking back before we, you know, turned this on was that there was no, like, capable, like...
No, no capable protagonist. Yeah, no
hero.
Yeah.
I mean, at the end, they gave someone, like, the hero role, but ultimately, even the lead, the actor that, or the character of the cop that was supposed to be the lead of the movie, he was kind of a dumb shit, like, most of the thing.
He's pretty useless.
And he didn't even, like, normally there's a point in the movie, at least three quarters of the way through, where they start to figure it out, and they start to act like the hero. He literally didn't figure it out until, like, the last, like, 10 seconds before he was, like, off camera again.
And it all had to be explained to him pretty much anyway.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad they explained it, because they had to explain it to me. the typical, like, badass, like, sidekick characters, they kind of fucked up too. Like, they weren't even given normally when you have those types of characters, they let them go out in some, like, big, like, blaze of glory. I mean, they kind of did for the one guy, like, the, I guess it's the father, once they kind of revealed that a little bit. They let him go out. He sacrificed himself, you know, setting himself on fire and whatnot. And obviously they let the son live, but they never really had that moment where, like, okay, here's the badass that's really going to, you know, go and do something crazy. And then they had characters that were just completely fucking useless, like Kim.
Yeah, Kim.
For those who haven't seen it or may not see it or will see it, there's a character in this that's played by an intern, and she's pretty useless, like, right from the jump. She admits that she doesn't know anything. She's fascinated by, like, the gore of, working in a hospital, but you can kind of tell that she almost looks like she's going to be fodder just to be killed. Like, oh, here's a character that they're going to kill off. It's not going to matter much. And she never does anything, really. She just kind of...
She contributes nothing to the story.
And she lives. And it's... that's. I was like, oh, man, like, this little girl, like, I pegged her as the leader of the cult. Like, I thought she was going to be she's so useless that she's just letting things happen because she has a reason she's letting things happen. And nope, she didn't do anything except she hid in a closet, caused some catastrophes, and couldn't do a surgery when...
And she stole a guy's fruit cup.
Oh, she didn't steal it. So she is pretty much the antagonist of this movie.
Is she like, when they have a character in a movie that lends nothing to the story whatsoever, you kind of think, okay, well, they're just, you know, fodder for, you know, the villain to kill off immediately. And when that person makes it through the entire film unscathed, you're just kind of like, all right, what was the point of her?
I mean, now that I'm thinking about it, it's kind of funny that they would do that. I mean, there was subtle humor throughout the whole movie. There were some, like, one-liners or, like, backhanded comments that certain characters would make. And maybe she was, like, the giant backhanded comment. Like, letting the weakest, most useless character survive the whole thing.
Yeah. Like, the one that's the screaming and freaking out the entire one is never level-headed the entire movie. And then somehow that's the person that makes it through.
Yeah. So, my analysis of the...
One thing I did really, really, really like about the movie is the look of it. Is that it looks like it's straight out of 80s John Carpenter movie. Like, just, like... Just, you know, how the dark, you know, just the way the movie looks. The way they do the creature... whatever it was thing, you know, I thought it looked great. I thought the music was good. The music score was good. But it's just really confusing movie.
Well, my thing is that... Well, first off, the KKK members weren't actually part of the KKK. So they do have triforces on their faces.
Yes.
And they serve a purpose to the cult. My thing is that it reminded me a lot of... If Prince of Darkness was made today, it probably would be this film. Because in Prince of Darkness, they use Alice Cooper as a hobo who leads a bunch of bums that prevent people from leaving the church. Yeah. In this one, it's this weird, like, you know, Sun looking like members of Sun would be, like, hanging outside with knives and the Triforce on their face.
And they really serve no purpose other than to give reason for why they can't leave the hospital.
Yeah, and that was basically what the bums were in Prince of Darkness.
Yeah.
And even the whole void, like, I'm going to pull my daughter, you know, into this world, it's similar to the daughter trying to pull the devil through the mirrors in Prince of Darkness. So I think... Although it's not exactly like the movie, I think if Carpenter or someone grabbed, maybe Rob Zombie will do it, but if someone grabbed Carpenter's Prince of Darkness and made it today and made it dark, that would be this movie.
Yeah.
And I also, when you were saying with the makeup and whatnot, or the creatures, what I liked is that they kept it dark and you never really got like a full view of them. They kept it just out of view enough that I know for me, I was trying to imagine what the hell was going on with the thing. And I probably came up with way worse than any makeup guy could come up with.
Yeah.
And I like that about movies that make you dive into your own like psyche and like pull dumb shit out of your head. Like, and I thought that was an effective tool to not fully show, just show bits and pieces of it. So what are your final thoughts on the film? Do you recommend it? Do you not recommend it? Do you need to see it again? Like, what's
I myself will definitely watch it again to see if I miss something that helps explain what happened better. I would definitely watch it again. I don't know if I would recommend people to go out and see it in the theater, but if, you know, when it comes on to, you know, Netflix or you see it on, you know, DVD, Blu-ray, whatever, it's definitely a good hour and a half of entertainment. I won't say you have to beat down the doors to go see it, but yeah, it's definitely an entertaining movie.
Yeah, I would agree to that. I think that what I noticed through the film, there were certain continuity issues that I would like to go back and see if I missed something that explained it. And maybe there wasn't continuity issues. I mean, it is a short film, so cutting things out wouldn't make much sense. I would recommend it if you really, really are big fans of Carpenter and Clive Barker and those type of psychological horror films. Maybe those would be the type of people that need to go beat down the doors to go see it. For your average horror fan or even your average moviegoer, you can wait and scare yourself in your own house instead of
going to... Or if you're really like saying, what the fuck, every 5 minutes, yeah, this is a movie for you too.
Well, you could say what the fuck in that trailer that we saw beforehand.
That's true, too.
So there's a movie coming out called Night of the Virgin or something like that, and it just says fuck a whole bunch of times in the trailer. It has nothing to do with the movie we just saw.
But you know, I definitely want to see it now. Yes. So,
all right, well, maybe that'll be another mandate.
Mission accomplished.
So we're going to wrap this up. The verdict is you can wait for it, but it is entertaining.
Yes.
So until the next time, we are out of here.
Toodles.
Two people, one movie, so many opinions. Welcome to The Mandate.
All right, this is your host, Sean Wren. We're here with the fourth episode of The Mandate. I'm here with Brian Carolla, former bassist of Jersey rock band East of Anything. Brian, say hello to the people.
Hi, people.
Brian, what are we here to see today?
We're going
to
see Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2.
Numero dos. So what do you know about this this particular film? Because we're not going to really talk about the first one, because if you don't know anything about the first one, you are a moron.
You're stupid.
Yeah, so what do you know about this one?
I know that we're going to meet Star-Lord's father, and I've kind of stayed away from everything else about it, because the first movie, if I was born in a different era, it would have been my Star Wars. Like, that was my personal opinion about it, so my expectations are through the roof.
Yeah, I can attest to that. I stayed pretty much away from it. I saw the trailers. I got psyched, and I have not read anything else about it. I don't even know the basic plot from Wikipedia, because I don't want to ruin anything for myself. And I like the fact that I don't know much about the Guardians of the Galaxy to begin with, other than the movie and what they had to do with the Infinity Gauntlet in the comics. Other than that, their stories are completely blank to me. So, do you have any expectations for this?
I expect it to be good. My experience with the Guardians is a little more than that. I read a couple of the recent crossovers with the X-Men, so I have a little more knowledge, but not much.
So early prediction, better, worse, or equal to the first one?
I don't like to think about that.
Fair enough. So we will get back to you after we see this movie, before everyone else does. Later. All right, so we just saw Guardians of the Galaxy, and we just talked for about 5 minutes before I hit the record button, which is awesome. So we're going to talk about some of the shit that we just talked about and messed it all up.
Maybe our thoughts will be more cohesive.
Yeah. So, again, we're going to go with I'm going to let Brian do some of the wrap-up and give his thoughts on the film.
As far as, I mean, the whole movie, it's a ton of fun. It maybe isn't as narratively, I would almost say, perfect as the first movie. It gets a little scattershot in the beginning of the last third, but the characters they know each other better, so they interact a little bit better. The jokes are just really fast firing, but it's a lot of fun. It's good. The Marvel references are through the roof. There's tons of them if you know a lot about the greater cosmic portion of the comics.
Oh, well, they kind of drop hidden characters Easter eggs throughout the whole thing. Like,
yeah.
Howard the Duck, Adam Warlock reference, the space dog. What does it call that dog's
is
name?
It Cosmo or something?
Yeah, Cosmo's in it for a second.
The Watchers are in it, which is crazy. I like let out like a strange noise when I saw them on screen.
I think half the theater did.
I was like, oh!
Yeah, and obviously Stan Lee makes his cameo a few times. One of the things that I said this before I hit the record button for real this time, was that I thought that the jokes were going to be too rehashed, and we both agreed that they did a lot of them.
Yeah, they looped back around on a lot of jokes, but they made them different enough where they were still fun and fresh like the first one.
And I think that the fact that the characters' relationships were established in the first film really helped them just to start going right away. Like, you knew how each character felt about each other, and it allowed the jokes to there to be that jokes. It's like riffing. It's like brothers, like, you know, riffing on each other like all the time. And that's that's the way that felt for me. So I'm glad that it wasn't just a bunch of rehashed jokes. It was some rehashed jokes, but then they like an overabundance of it, which actually made the movie flow really well. One thing I can say in comparison to the first film that I was a downer, I guess, or like a it wasn't as good as the first film, is that I didn't think Ego was nearly as good as a villain as Ronan was.
Yeah, I really liked Ronan too, and I feel like he gets kind of short shrift people for some reason, maybe because he's not like in the first movie long enough where he dies in the first one.
Yeah, I always saw it when they killed him in the first movie. Even like the moment that the first time I saw the film, I was like, oh man, it's a wasted character, because I literally have no idea how they would bring him back.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, obviously it's a comic book world.
One snap of the fingers of the Infinity Gauntlet, yeah,
can
come could, back.
Yeah, and he can bring but back he, any of the characters.
Betrayed Thanos, though.
Yeah, so Ego was a cool character. For a minute, I thought that he might have ended up being like a martyr and saving the Guardians from the other faction that was trying to take them out the whole movie. But I'm glad that they stuck with my initial gut feeling, was that as soon as he arrived, I knew he was going to end up being like the main antagonist. obviously, I didn't know how he was going to reveal himself and reveal his master plan, which I was surprised in. And then as soon as it happened, I was like, oh man, I should have saw that coming from like a mile away. Because they kind of set it up right in the beginning of the movie with the flashback with him and Peter's mother.
Yeah, that's true. I take away, I'm just thinking about as we're talking here, the relationships. There's like a couple, they kind of break off into pairs a lot in the movie, and there's some really good Yondu rocket stuff. There's some really good Gamora and Nebula stuff. There's some really good Peter and Ego stuff. There's everyone kind of has there's a lot of really good stuff going on between like interacting characters that maybe I didn't expect. I don't know, because I honestly hate everything that Nebula does in the first movie. It's my least favorite part of the movie. I think maybe the actress overacts. I'm not sure what it is, but she, after about a third of the way into this movie, where she there was a lot of more of the same, it seemed like she finally figured out the role, or it might be the writing. I'm not sure what it is that had me kind of not liking her, but she's grown on me now, and I actually liked her by the end of the movie.
No, I think it was the evolution of character. Now, it could have been overacting, because I thought that she was kind of awful in the first film. Like, I thought she was too brooding. She was too she almost came off like an angsty teenager,
It came across like a girl playing a villain in a high school play.
Yeah, I could agree to that. And this one, because there was obviously, they peeled back some of the layers on her and why she is the way she is. Once her story like evolved and you kind of figured out Nebula, then I think she started to become like a character, not necessarily one of the stronger characters, but she became a character that I tolerated now.
And a character that could, you know, kill Thanos in the next movie,
if they follow
the comics, she gets the Infinity Gauntlet and beats him.
Yeah, so it'll be interesting if they, you know, put a lot of stock in Karen Gilliam going forward.
Yeah. But like I said, she picked it up in the second half of this movie, where like I feel confident she can probably pull it off.
One of the other things I thought was surprising was how they ended the film. Like I said in other casts that we've done, we spoil everything. So when they killed Yondu and they gave him his, you know, big send off, his big funeral, and they ended with the last shot of Rocket with a tear, you know, and he had just, you know, kind of bonded with him only like moments, like right before the fight, they bonded. So, you know, Rocket's like, man, I just lost like the one person who gets me and could identify with him. And they went right to credits right from that last shot of Rocket. And I thought that was a great way to go out. He, you know, Yondu got his farewell, his big farewell that he, you know, was told that he would never get. And, you know, and then you got to see Rocket, you know, be emotional. Like he just, you know, barks it off. And this one, he, you know, you got to see that there was some sort of like emotion to Rocket.
Yeah, it almost got me at the end there. I welled up a little bit. I'm not ashamed to say that, but nothing like Logan. I was full on sobbing at the end of that movie.
Yeah, I don't think I could cry to a CG raccoon crying.
Yeah, it didn't. But I think I welled up a bit about Yondu. I thought like that he really developed well in this movie. In a direction that I didn't expect him to, and just Michael Rooker rules.
Yeah, he's awesome, and it was great to see him go from the like slimy, you know, backstabber that he was in the first film to, you know,
maybe he wasn't backstabbing in the first film.
Yeah, that's true. That's what that kind of develops in the, in this film. But I like the 180 his character essentially does by the end of the film. And they give Michael Rooker, who's an underrated actor, in my opinion, a really good send off in this film, in this series, which kind of sucks because like it's great how they did it. But I'm sad that he's not going to be in any more films.
Yep.
All right, so since this is the mandate, we always come up with a mandate. Do we mandate that we see this movie, or do we mandate that we do not see this movie?
You should absolutely see this movie. Everyone should see this movie.
That's my sentiments exactly. I've kind of figured going into this that the mandate would be two thumbs up and go see this. So the movie comes out Friday. This fucking podcast will probably come out sometime after that. So hopefully you've seen it before we ruin the whole thing for you.
Yanni dies.
Oh, yeah, and make sure you stay for the credits.
Size, Adam Warlock's in it. What's other spoilers? Sylvester Stallone is a guardian. He has a bunch of friends with him.
Yeah, that's about it. Okay. So we'll sign off. No more spoilers.
Spoiler.
Yeah, we'll see you next time.
If you take two old punk rockers who are past their prime, put them in front of a movie screen and give them a podcast, what do you get? Cinema Punks. Cinepunks. It's the mixtape of movies.
Two people, one movie, so many opinions. Welcome to the mandate.
Hey everyone, it's your host John Wren here with another episode of The Date. Today I have my, I know him as Pudge, you guys know him as Matt the Frost Giant.
Matty Frost, Matt the Frost Giant, the Abominable Snowman, and all around goofball, that's me.
Well, before we get into the movie, what's going on with the Frost Giant?
We got a new album. It's going to be coming out sometime this year, hopefully. Right now all the tracking's done and we're saving up enough money to get it mixed and mastered. We're recording at Siler Sound Studios with AJ Viana, and John Boyce owns the place from When Man Meets His Maker. He's one of the co-owners. It's sounding really good. It's really sounding amazing beyond my wildest expectations, but albums cost money to make, and we're a little stuck right now, but we'll get it together, and we'll make sure it comes out this year sometime. It's going to blow you away, though.
That's fucking awesome, because
going to seriously blow you, because it's blowing me away.
That's awesome, because I feel like it's been like 100 million years since the last time I saw you guys and got the hands on the EP. I think I almost melted that CD when I listened to it so much when we first got it.
Yeah, we haven't played a show in 2 years. The last show we played was at the TLA with Enciferum, Corpiclani, Trollfest, and that show was a little bit hackneyed because I played bass and we had a fill-in drummer, and it was sort of a, you know, hey, it's a show that's right up our alley to play, so we played it. But after that, we just kind of got caught up in our own things. The other guys in my band, Scott Brustett, Jonathan Smith, Jay Espenson, they went and formed Iron Maiden, the Tail Gunner tribute band. Oh. Tail Gunner's the name of the band. They're an Iron Maiden tribute band, and they've gone through some changes. Scott's still doing it, but I started getting back and writing the material last year and did a whole demo, and then we won a contest for free studio time, and we took that as credit towards the whole album instead of just taking the three songs that we won, and decided to do the whole album right. It's coming out amazing. I wish I'd have done this album this way from the get-go.
That's awesome. I can't wait to hear it.
Yeah.
So let's get to the purpose of this whole shebang. What are we here to see today?
We are here to see Wonder Woman.
Well, for me, Wonder Woman is a character that I never gave a shit about. I was never that big of a DC fan outside of Superman and Batman. And the only thing I knew about Wonder Woman was that she had like a lasso, an invisible spaceship or something like that, and that she dressed kind of like Captain America. That's literally all I know. What do you know about the character?
Well, I go back to the old television series from the 70s and 80s. I watched it when I was a kid. I watched a lot of comic book adaptations of these shows when I was a kid. And I liked Wonder Woman as, you know, as part of the whole Justice League. The Saturday morning cartoon in the 80s, they had the Hall of Justice. Okay. They had all the heroes there, and, you know, animation was bad, plot lines were bad. But when you were a kid and you liked comic book stories, that was what was on TV, and it was great, right? Never really thought that they would give Wonder Woman a standalone movie, though, because she wasn't that big of a character in the overall scheme of things, at least not from what was shown on TV. So I was pretty excited when I saw her pop up in Batman versus Superman. I thought that was really cool.
I thought she had the best... I think she had the single best moment in the movie.
Absolutely.
And I think they wasted it by showing it in the trailers.
Yeah, I definitely think it would have been a better surprise. It surprised people. I mean, that would have been the one thing that everybody on Facebook would have spoiled for everybody, but it still would have been really cool if they didn't show that in the trailer.
Yeah. So that is the only, with me knowing nothing to do with the character, and I'm starting to pick up a little bit of her, mm-hmm. what I'm assuming is her correct origins about the Amazonian stuff,
right.
How she gains her powers, just from the snippets they give you in the trailer.
Right.
To me, this seems like, or at least with her, she seemed the most intriguing character because I don't know much about her.
She reminds me more, if you want to draw a parallel, just, you know, for, you know, comic book fans will hate me for this, but if you want to draw a parallel to the Marvel Cinematic Universe, she reminds me more of the Thor character in the sense that she is from, like, another dimension, place, time sort of thing where, you know, where Thor's not necessarily a god. He's like an alien from another plane, if you want to take it that way, from Asgard. And she's from, you know, she's an Amazon, and she's raised among these women. She gains these powers. Again, I'm not even super familiar with her origins anymore. It's been that long. But she is a fascinating character in that regard, especially when you think that over the years, and even when Wonder Woman came out, there's just been a dearth of powerful female characters. Yeah. It's always been, you know, there's Superman and, oh, Supergirl. You know, Batman, yeah. Oh, Batgirl. And it was always just sort of a takeoff of one of their major characters. Wonder Woman came along by herself and really changed the game. So I'm hoping that this movie does justice to that.
The pun with justice.
Yeah. Yeah. Totally intentional.
For me, because I don't know anything about her, I think I'm going to... My expectations are... I don't have an expectation for this. DC has kind of dropped the ball on almost everything that they've touched, with the exception of the Nolan Batman series. But they were kind of like something else.
Right. I don't even think that they're technically part of the new DC universe that was started by Zack Snyder, who directed the Superman movies and the Batman v Superman. Or I don't know if he did Justice Suicide. Did he do Suicide Squad?
I think he was a producer.
So again, I don't necessarily know. I do agree that the DC movies as of late have always left something a little flat.
Yeah.
I mean, they've had a lot of hype and build up, but something has always let me down about them. I hope it's not the case with this one. I'd really like to see them, you know, get a movie that does really well.
Well, for me, I'm hoping with the freshness of it, mm-hmm. that I can just be impressed instead of... I'm not going to be nitpicking the origins. Did they mess this character up? Did they screw up this character?
Right.
And to me, even with the Marvel stuff, like, Marvel's done it so well that I don't even care that they're changing origins because they're just mm-hmm. writing good movies.
Well, right. The great thing about the Marvel movies is that if you... Most of them stand out on their own as great movies. They don't have to... You don't have to be current on every single Marvel Cinematic Universe movie to enjoy Guardians of the Galaxy or a Captain America standalone movie. They're good movies on their own, except for Iron Man 2, which was a piece of shit. But,
I can agree to that. All right, so what is your hope expectation for this film?
I'm hoping we get a good balance. I'm hoping we get a consistent story arc. I'm hoping that we get a character that we can believe that... You know, sell it to me. Make me believe that Wonder Woman is the real deal and not just something that you're putting in there because you're putting together a cinematic universe and trying to do what Marvel did with the Avengers. Let me really feel who she is as a character. Because if I can't believe in the character, I can't believe in the whole thing. It takes me out of the element.
Fantastic. I think for me, my expectation is pretty similar. Is that I just want for a character that I know nothing about, you need to sell me on it. You need to mm-hmm. make me believe that she can stand next to Batman and Superman and hold her own, that they're not carrying her. I want her to be a strong character. I want to be able to hopefully come back and revisit her in a second or third movie or however they want to do this.
Exactly.
So if they drop the ball on this one, they're not going to get me for the second one because, you know, that's a...
It is really hard because Batman and Superman are two very iconic characters in the DC universe. You know, they pretty much eclipse every other character out there.
Yeah.
So even the other members of the Justice League, Aquaman, The Flash, you know, they're going to have a hard time with their standalone stuff. You know, so there's a challenge there. But also, like Guardians of the Galaxy, because we don't necessarily know what to expect, it could be something fantastic.
Yeah.
Or it could be a letdown. I'm hoping it's the former, though. I don't want to be let down.
All right, well, we're going to go in and find out what the hell it is, and we'll come back and we'll talk a little bit about it.
All right, rock and roll.
All right, so we just got out of seeing Wonder Woman, and it was, I think there was a lot to digest. It was a little over 2 hours. What are your initial thoughts on it, Matt?
Wonder Woman! My initial thoughts, I definitely think it's the best of the DC movies that I've seen to date.
I will absolutely agree with that.
As far as the DC universe started by Snyder with the Superman films, I still put The Dark Knight above it, but I don't know if that's...
I would say the Nolan trilogy is kind of its own thing, especially now that they're going to do the Batflix stuff and kind of distance themselves from the Nolan trilogy.
Right. Definitely. I have to say I was... I did think it was maybe a little long. I mean, they maybe could have trimmed out maybe 10 minutes of it, like, here and there. But, yeah, that the only problem I had with it was just the pacing here and there. Aside of that... the story was great. Her fight scenes were amazing. Not that many of them, though.
I thought some of it looked a little clunky, especially when she was fast. There's a particular scene when she was fighting next to Chris Pine. She was, like, whipping her lasso around and whatnot, and it kind of made it... You could tell she was CG'd in there, and it looked a little little clunky.
I guess that one... The first real battle scene she did in the village was great. Her fight with Ares was it wasn't underwhelming, but I guess I just felt like there was too much of her in her action pose and all the stuff flying around her to make it look like, you know, they were doing battle. It was almost like the old, like, anime things where you would see the and the person's yelling and all the lights shooting past them. There was a lot of that. I definitely feel like some of that was lifted and taken in, that type of sequencing was used. But I will say I thought Chris Pine was very good. I thought he really carried it pretty well. And of course, I'm going to kick myself for not knowing the actor's name who played Wonder Woman, but
Gal Gadot.
Gal Gadot, yes, she was really good.
I think she sold the naiveness, is that the word?
The naivete.
Yeah, of the character. And watching her, even like her facial expressions as she was figuring things out, even at the end when she was like, "Oh wait, I'm a hell of a lot more powerful than I thought I would." Everything just, I think she allowed the character really to go along with the story, just to gradually come out of her shell right away.
She did the fish out of water scenes really well too. I like that. I always like stuff like that where you take somebody who's, you know, used to one way of thing, you know, like they did it in the Thor movie too, where he first came down and he smashed the cup and everything.
Another.
Yeah. So I think they did those scenes rather well. I want to say though, my favorite part of the whole movie wasn't so much the story, the action, the cinematography was fantastic. Of course the movie's set during World War I in Europe, and it really looked good. The movie looked good as far as being a period piece in that aspect of it. I will say that the first Captain America movie did the same thing. It was set a little later in World War II. I definitely think that this one really captured Europe in that time period, that war-torn Europe, really, really well.
That was one of my things as I was watching it. Like, with all the comedy elements that they finally added, which I'll get to in a little bit, I liked that they were like... While they were trying to keep some lightheartedness, there were certain scenes where you're like, "Wow, I was really impressed on. They're capturing war. They're not trying to.
They're not shying away from it.
Yeah, they let it know when they did the No Man's Land and how it was just mucky, swamp, like disgusting, or, like and
even when they got to the village and they had a, you know, they captured the village and they retook it and everybody was celebrating and then the next day they all get killed.
Yeah, yeah.
Spoiler alert. Yeah. But yeah, that really showed a lot of the, you know they basically. They showed what war is like. You know, it's, you never know if you're going to live or die one second to the next. And they didn't shy away from killing off people that Diana came to care about.
Yeah. Stepping back on to go and get away from like a little bit of the sadness, I do like that DC is finally shying away from the whole, oh, we're going to make all our movies serious. Because they came out and DC said, mm-hmm. well, we're taking a different approach. Marvel's doing all the comedy stuff. We're going to be, you know, we're going to be Detective Comics again. We're going to make everything serious. And I think that's failed them up until this point. This movie had a ton of comedy in it. And it was like, it wasn't like forced comedy. It was all mm-hmm. subtle, little comments, just the way right. a character would say something, some sarcasm.
Right. Well, I think you need, if you're doing a comic book and you have X amount of pages to communicate a story, maybe the comedy in there that's going to be contained in there is going to be either very light or it's going to be something like Deadpool where the whole purpose of the character is to be comedic and slapstick. But in a movie, you know, you can't have that weight of seriousness carrying you for 2.5 hours because otherwise people are going to get bored. Especially, like I said, pacing is very important in a movie of that length. And even though the pacing in this was maybe a little jarring at times, it wasn't nearly as obvious as some of the Zack Snyder films. Batman v Superman was a mess. I will say this though, the one, and it's not a complaint, but basically, she realizes at the end of this movie that she's a goddess. She's imbued with godlike powers. Right up there with Superman himself, probably, I would say. And yet, at the end of Batman v Superman, we don't even see a glimpse of that.
Yeah, especially when they were fighting. I mean, she would know by this point, if you go by the right. timeline of history, she would know by this point fighting mm-hmm. Doomsday that she's like, well, you know, I'm equal exactly. to you guys. But I will say this, going back to Batman and Superman, when that fight with Doomsday was happening, she seemed to be the most effective of all three of them. Like, Batman did his little trickery, and Superman, right. I felt like was getting he was getting the raw end of the deal. He was the one getting beating up the whole time.
Well, you know, he was taking the brunt of the attack and ended up doing the whole self-sacrifice thing, but yeah, sometimes you just wonder what Batman's point is otherwise.
Well, he's, I mean, and seeing the preview for Justice League, seeing him say, like, he finally makes the joke, like, what's your superpower? Oh, I'm rich.
Yeah.
Like, they finally address it. They're like, all right, let's the elephant in the room.
Let's not get the social justice crowd started.
Yeah.
his superpower is white privilege.
Yeah, pretty much.
But, yeah, that was very, it was definitely, I liked, there were parts of the movie where it was dark, like visually dark, like a lot of the other DC universe, but yet, especially in the beginning during the origin story and the training montages and stuff, where it was very bright, and her uniform stood out against the darkness in several scenes, and yeah. that was deliberate because yeah, yeah. here she is in her yellow and her gold and red and blue outfit against a stark gray, dark blue, smoky background. And I like that. I like the introduction of color into the DC universe.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, sure.
It sounds, yeah, but you know, going with their whole serious theme, like everything is just, you know, dark and brooding and blue and cloudy. And this was actually a ray of sunshine. I think that's what I'm going to go with. It is definitely a ray of sunshine.
And we were saying this when we were walking up before we recorded, and we talked about this before, we went and actually saw the movie. The one thing that I really, 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 really like about this movie is the fact that this is a good standalone film. I don't need to see any other DC movies. I don't need to see any right. future movies. If someone said, oh, this is it, this is the only Wonder Woman movie we're ever giving you guys, I'm okay with that, because there was a beginning, middle, and end. You don't need to, you just know, okay, she's going to go off and fight crime for the rest of her life. Mm-hmm. She says that, and you can just make up your own stories about what she does.
It stands by itself as it's a great standalone movie. It doesn't need to be part of a cinematic universe, although it very well can be. The one thing I will say that I've found, with the exception of Batman, of course, and he's uber rich, is that a lot of these DC characters seem to be ridiculously overpowered. I don't know if that's a thing. Again, I'm not the biggest comic book nerd out there. I don't collect comic books. I don't read a lot of them. And I'm pretty much just a movie guy. But, you know, you have Superman, who's pretty much an omnipotent alien. And then you have, now you have Diana, who's a Wonder Woman, who's a Greek goddess. Yeah, and it just seems to me like the stakes are going to be ratcheted way up. I mean, what are we going to learn about the other characters when we find out more about them as far as the new cinematic interpretation of them? And what are their opponents going to be like? What are the supervillains going
to
be like?
Well, I feel like the whole goal is to get to Darkseid.
Yeah.
And which, you know, if he's as, you know, powerful as they're going to make him, I mean, he has to be more powerful than Doomsday. And Doomsday was, you know, pretty much handling them until they decided to... They came up with a plan, essentially.
Right.
So it's going to be interesting, especially, I think, my prediction for the future Justice League things, I think they'll give Aquaman a lot of power. I think he'll be maybe not as strong as...
I think they're going to have to, because that was the running joke.
Yeah. So I think he'll be as strong as Superman and Wonder Woman, or maybe not as strong, but he'll be up there. I'm curious to see how much they play Cyborg and The Flash. Like, right. I think they'll have their roles, they'll have their key moments going into it.
Yeah.
But I think the focus now is clearly on the three. They'll let Aquaman be like the brute force, essentially. Like
right.
he seemed, especially having Jason Momoa, you know.
Oh yeah, they couldn't have cast a better character, yeah, better person than that.
So let him just be like the maniac that wants to like smash things, essentially. Mm-hmm. I with this movie, and especially it's already getting like a 96 on Rotten Tomatoes, which I don't really necessarily agree with Rotten Tomatoes all the time, but 96 is a hell of a score, especially for all the DC stuff.
They really, Rotten Tomatoes really like screwed over Xanadu. That's a fantastic movie.
But if Wonder Woman gets the attention that she's get, like what I think she's going to get, I think this is going to get a lot of great reviews. I think it's going to do very well in the box office, despite having to compete against movies like Alien, Guardians, and even the new Pirates movie. I think it's most likely probably going to be number one this weekend. If she
gets, I don't see anything toppling coming in ahead of that.
If she gets number one this weekend, they make her a much bigger role in the final Justice League movie.
I agree, and here's the thing. Of course, we all know that that comic book aficionados will find everything and anything to complain about in a cinematic interpretation. So, taking that aside, taking that with a big heaping tablespoonful of salt, your average moviegoer that likes superhero movies is really going to like this movie. I really enjoyed it, and I was really trying to find something to pick apart about it. But I definitely think this is an entertaining movie. It's one that's going to hold your attention for the 2 hours and 10 minutes or however long it is. And it really... It definitely gives the character a very believable storyline. Again, great standalone movie from beginning to end. So I really think that it's gonna do really well. I think it's going to revitalize the DC universe and maybe get people looking again.
I think if anything, because this is the first one that's not the, well, I mean, with the exception of Suicide Squad, but we won't talk about that. But
rule of Suicide Squad.
As far as the Justice League series, that part of the DCU, this is the first one not directed by Zack Snyder.
Yeah.
So, and I feel like you can tell, like, Zack Snyder has a lot of great ideas. I think he has some good movies under his belt. I generally enjoyed 300. He has a really good look.
I really liked Watchmen. I thought that was
good. Yeah, and the Watchmen was. I actually liked what he did in Watchmen as far as changing. He got rid of the giant squid. I would have loved to seen that on an IMAX screen.
Right.
But he made it more believable. It made it more you know, most people can't relate to a giant squid trying to attack the Earth. So making it about like nuclear bombs and whatnot, that makes sense.
Right.
This was not directed by Zack Snyder, and this is the first one since that I've been able to go, all right, this is great. Now, they're probably not going to turn the reins over to her or even Joss Whedon, who's finishing the Justice League movie. But I wonder if he'll step back and say, okay, maybe I need some help.
Well, I think that's been the strength of the Marvel movies, and again, going into the Star Wars, the newer Star Wars movies, is you don't have one person with a death grip on the franchise. You have more ideas. You have more fan-generated ideas. You have more input. I mean, a lot of these directors and actors and people that have come up in their careers were fans of comic books. And, you know, why not let them have a crack at it?
Yeah.
So the Marvel movies, you know, you have Gunn, who did the Guardians movies. You have Jon Favreau did the Iron Man movies. Joss Whedon did the Avengers movie.
Yeah.
So you have all these different voices that are putting their own spin on it. And some of the Marvel movies have been a little clunky. We mentioned the unmentionable Iron Man 2. Sorry, John, it was a bust. but the strength lies in diversity. I like that J.J. Abrams isn't doing this, the Last Jedi, that he didn't direct the Last Jedi.
Yeah.
He says he wishes he had, but I think that
he recognized.
We learn from the lessons of Lucas that you just don't.
Yeah, do your one. It's better for the franchise. Yeah.
It's better for the franchise if you have different people putting their input into it, because there's so many great ideas out there to just have it centered on one.
And just style difference changes it up. I don't want to see the same movie three times in a row.
Yeah, although Force Awakens was basically A New Hope, but we don't get too nitpicky about it. It was fun.
All right, so let's wrap this up. So the final verdict on this, you recommend, not recommend? Is it a movie? Is it a go see in the theater movie, or is it a wait for DVD movie?
I would definitely, if you can, go see it in the theater, because it looks great on the big screen. You know, the music, we didn't talk about that. The score is really intense. It's really heavy. I made the joke about the Shattered Realm breakdown at the end.
No, the end credit music is massive. Yeah,
you know, I don't know who did the music off the top of my head, but yeah, it's pretty heavy and it's really compelling. And I love the use of the electric guitar in there during Wonder Woman's fight scenes. I thought that was pretty cool.
Well, her theme song is the best.
Yeah, her theme song is definitely the best. It's definitely worth going to see in the movie theater if you have time to go, and you know, grab some popcorn. You know, just slather it with butter and salt and just enjoy it. It's a great afternoon, great kickback, and have fun flick.
And I will completely agree with all of that. My verdict is go see this in the theaters as soon as you can before it gets spoiled all over the internet. So we'll get the heck out of here. Do you have any final thoughts or any words?
Just enjoy it. Have a good time.
All right. So I'll be back next week with The Mummy. I have no idea who my guest will be, but I'll surprise you. All right. We're out of here.
Late.
Don't talk. Just listen.
Black sun, there is no hope, only mystery, wonder, and danger. Black Sun Dispatches on the Cinepunks Podcast Network.